Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
What is a coy wolf?
A coy wolf.
I had never heard of coy wolves.
I hadn't either until we got this Creation Magazine.
Yeah, which is my favorite.
Oh, absolutely. Great stories in here.
Yeah. Creation Magazine, published out of Australia by CMI, Creation Ministries International. So, Fred, if we could do this whole show right from this magazine, I would love it.
Great articles out of here, and we're going to start off again with the coy wolf. Now, this is a hybrid. It's basically a combination of a wolf, a coyote, and basically just a domestic dog, right?
Yeah, they call it an eastern coyote, and it's genetically one-tenth of a dog and one-quarter wolf and 65% coyote.
So it sounds like to me it's the same kind of animal. It's a dog kind.
Right, and that gets to the Bible, God creating creatures, organisms, to reproduce after their kind.
Now, would the coy wolf have to be on the ark next to my Malamute?
Well, there would be a male and female of the dog kind or the wolf kind, and they would quickly diversify into all these different species.
So you wouldn't need all these different dog kind or species on the ark. You would need just one dog kind, and out of one dog kind, you can have an incredible amount of variety. I mean, you look at, you know, pugs, poodles, St. Bernard, just amazing how different they are. And when you look at dog skulls, they are so remarkably different.
Oh, if
you know, an evolutionist would use that as like proof of evolution.
If we found it in the fossil record, they would say from a Great Dane down to a Chihuahua, and they would have maybe 30 different species, but it's one species.
Yeah. It's like Bill Nye in the debate with Ken Ham. He showed those pictures of ape skulls, basically. And this is proof of evolution. The first thing that came to my mind was the dog, all the dog skulls. Oh, so is that proof of evolution?
Right.
These are all the same dog kind.
So, Fred, this creature is twice the size of a coyote. Now, we were hiking up on North Table Mountain. That's where we put the world's largest protest sign. When Barack Obama came to
DNC.
Denver, we said, not in our town, and we put a 666-foot-long sign.
Was that a record?
That was a world record.
Is it recorded?
We applied to Guinness. We got a government scientist to verify the size of the sign. Just go to AmericanRTL.org, AmericanRightToLife.org/sign. You'll see the photos, the videos, the news reports. Really interesting. Well,
what did it say?
It said, DNC destroys unborn children. 510 feet tall, 666 feet wide. Visible. You could read it from 8 miles away.
Wow.
And it was visible in Denver, the metro area, for 20 miles to the airport, to the Aurora Reservoir.
Wow.
So it was quite a condemnation of Barack Obama and the Democrats and any Republicans who would tolerate the killing of even a single child.
That's right.
So, Fred, we were hiking on top of North Table, my boys and I, years ago. They were small. Dominic had to be like 4 years old. A few coyotes began following us at a distance. And it takes a long time to hike up there. And we were, and it's big on top of North Table.
Yeah.
And I tell you, it was scary having three young boys and the youngest maybe four or so. It was
scary. Just you and your wife with the kids?
No, it was just me and the three boys.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the bigger boys picked up rocks, and I had a hunting knife with me and a rock. But, you know, if they're starving and they see a small, you know, some herd walking through and a smaller one lags behind, to them, that's food.
Yeah. Now, when you noticed this, did you kind of stop your journey and turn around or you keep going?
No, we turned around.
Okay.
But it was 40 minutes before we got off North Table.
Wow.
Because we were in and on the other side. So imagine a coyote, but twice the size of a coyote.
Size.
And they're versatile hunters. Apparently, with the deforestation that happened in Ontario, Canada, and with the wolf population being, you know, hunted to near extinction, these creatures interbred. Wolf and coyote and dog, domestic dog. And so these things, they thrive even in urban environments like packs of dogs.
Yeah, yep.
Sort of scary. They probably end up in Detroit any day now.
Well, you know, of course, evolutionists use this as evidence for evolution. How many times have we seen this? I mean, clear cases of adaptation of a kind of animal that
right.
all creationists agree with. In fact, creation scientists talked about this before Darwin himself talked about natural selection.
Yes.
This is all variety within a kind of animal, and it can happen in a generation, yeah. basically. And yet evolution is supposed to be random mutations and natural selection, so it should take millions of years for them to have this.
Millions kind of years, not a couple decades yep. of interbreeding where there are no new genes that were evolved over a million years.
So they're being intellectually dishonest when they call this evolution. They call it rapid evolution. It's not right. evolution.
Right. Right.
It's not molecules to man evolution.
Increase in information. It's designed adaptation of the organism to fit the environment. That's
yeah.
what it is.
Yep.
So how many creatures may have been on Noah's Ark? I mean, in round numbers, because Ken Ham is building a full size, full scale Noah's Ark in
yeah.
Kentucky.
That's, I think, supposed to be ready by early July, July 7th.
Yes. Yeah. And the first 40 days and 40 nights. The tickets are really, I mean, they're hard to
is
get.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah. yeah, tickets first, for the first 40 days and 40 nights at the Ark Encounter, yeah. which is just down the
at
road from
this
the
time
Creation
around,
Museum.
At least this time around, more people would get in other than just Ken Ham and his family.
yeah, that's a good point. But how many creatures would have had to been on the Ark? You and I did a show on this about 2 years ago.
Yep.
And if you look at not the number of species, but the number of kinds of creatures, like in this case, one kind for wolves and coyotes and dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so about 1,000 kinds of animals.
Yeah, that's what creationists have eventually come up with. I know Woodmorap, who originally made the estimate, he was at 13,000, but he admitted he's being very conservative.
Yes.
And now we figure it's around 1,000. But even say it's 13,000, that's, you know,
that
plenty of room on the
fit,
ark.
Right.
There would have been, I think you'd have only used up like 20% of the ark or something yeah. like that.
And arcophobia is big, especially back in Kentucky, where
oh,
they're
yeah.
just freaking out. They hated the Creation Museum.
Yeah.
The ark is going to drive them ballistic.
Oh, absolutely.
Just
and, you know,
ballistic.
I'm sure it's going to be just incredibly successful.
And instead of
Creation
being
Museum.
Angry, they should turn to the Lord and trust
yeah.
in Jesus Christ. Yeah. Because if not, archive podcast of Real Science Radio are going to play forever in hell. It is not worth it. It is simply not
it's
worth
not
it.
Worth it.
No, actually, unbelievers get to live where they want forever.
Yeah.
Which is without God.
Yeah.
Real tragic. So the next story.
How about these stories from Aborigines from Australia on the low sea level?
Oh, I love
the coast.
It, Fred. I love it because the Bible tells us about the global flood that happened thousands of years ago. And there's a verse that says in the days of Peleg, the earth was divided.
Peleg? Is that pirate?
Peleg. Peleg. Oh,
Peleg.
Like archipelago.
Yep.
Right? The sea, a root for the sea.
Okay.
And islands divided by water. And so, and all around the world, there were coastal settlements that were eventually submerged and abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen some of those on our Bible tours of Greece and Turkey and so on. And so they went to these Aboriginal folks from 21 locations around Australia's coastline, and they have studied them, researched. And the researchers discovered that there is a preserved memory, a corporate memory of sea levels that were significantly lower than they are today.
Yeah. And if they were much lower, we could have had like land bridges, right?
Yes, exactly.
And that would explain
land bridges
a lot of the migration that we've seen.
From the Middle East, not out of Africa.
Yeah.
Mankind did not begin and, you know, spread out to the world from Africa, but from the Middle East, as history shows.
So when we ask about how did kangaroos get to Australia, did they catch a boat across the water?
Well, you know, even the evolutionists talk about floating log mats and creatures by the countless tens of thousands floating across the oceans, which
yeah.
is interesting. But there were land bridges
but in this case,
around the world.
Yeah, likely a land bridge.
Land bridges for humans. And the further people went, you know, you wonder why did people in Australia stay primitive for so long as compared to the Middle East? In ancient Sumerians and Babylonians. You know, why? And it's because of the division of labor and the multiplication and the population density. Because when you have so many people, people can specialize. Mm-hmm. And so some people could actually live their lives studying astronomy and mathematics. But when you have just a sparse population, you can't afford that. There's nobody to support those people. So that's why the sophistication of the culture in the Middle East was so extraordinary. I mean, we've seen recently published in some of the world's leading journals that the Babylonians were doing forms of calculus, things that were never imagined that they were doing.
And we've reported on studies of how our IQ has basically gets a little bit less each generation.
Yeah.
We're de-evolving.
Yeah, we are. And so, in fact, rsr.org/genius for the genius of ancient man.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool. So this story is wonderful that from 21 diverse locations around Australia's coastline, there's a corporate memory of a time when sea level was much lower and the coastline stretched much further out into mm-hmm. the sea as compared to where it is today. And that all speaks of the dramatic changes in the last 5,500 years after the global flood. And Fred, one distinction from CMI and us at Real Science Radio, they tend to go with catastrophic plate tectonics.
Yeah, that's been their paradigm for quite a long time.
Yeah, and we don't. I don't know that they officially endorse it, but they would tend to support that and oppose the Fountains of the Great Deep version of the hydroplate theory, which we support. We have a video on it, rsr.org/flood. People could see it. It's such a fun video. And we cover this. What they say in here is the reason for sea level rise was because of the ice age.
Mm-hmm.
All the glaciers melted. But my prediction is that's insufficient to cover the land bridges up in Alaska and around the world. It's insufficient, not enough water. But what caused the bulk of the sea level rise was after the flood, the continents that had been lifted up from below the floodwaters, those continents gradually settled back into the mantle over the next decades and centuries. And that's the primary reason why the sea level rose. And for example, the Colorado Plateau and the Rocky Mountains. And you have the Himalayan Mountains and the Tibetan Plateau over in Asia. And it's a confounding mystery to geologists. I mean, they write in their textbooks. They say, what would cause thousands of square miles of rock to rise up a mile above sea level? What would cause that?
Yeah.
And then they
and that happens not just in Tibet, not just the Tibetan Plateau. The Colombian Plateau is huge in North America.
Yes. In Tibet, that plateau raised up 15,000 feet, 3 miles into the sky. How do you get that much rock to raise up? And they don't know. They write in their textbooks that it is a mystery what could cause that. But when the mountains rose up in a day, as the Bible describes, because of isostatic rebound, when the mountains start settling back down into the crust and the crust back down into the mantle, that displacement of rock goes somewhere. So as the Rockies are going down, the Colorado Plateau is lifting up.
Yep. Get the hydroplate video. Asia. All this stuff is in there. It's great.
So fun. So anyway, that's pretty cool that the Aboriginal folk in Australia remember, they actually remember through their corporate memory, just like the corporate human recollection of dinosaurs, which is so well documented, they remember this actual Earth history that the atheist would think would take millions of years and men could never remember dinosaurs or this.
Yeah,
well, this they would say tens of thousands of years ago.
Okay, so this next story. So evolutionists, you know, they always have an artistic license. You know, paleontologists, they'll find a couple bones and they'll create a creature. And not only will they create some creature out of their wild imagination, they'll give it color. Well, here's an example of where we actually
have good evidence of the color. Right.
Of a bat, right?
Yes, bats. They look in these bats, and these are fossilized bats, tens of millions of years old, allegedly. And they see this organic material. And they see that must be some kind of
bacterial contamination.
Yeah, something like that. It can't be from the original bat.
Yeah.
Because the bat lived too long ago. It would all be permineralized by now. It would have all turned to stone. It turns out that these researchers from the University of Bristol, they've been measuring the melanin, the shape Mm-hmm. And they did this with Archaeopteryx a few years back.
Yeah.
The melanosomes, the organelles that create the melanin. And they're measuring them in the nanometers, the billionths of a meter.
Mm-hmm.
And they figured out that they could tell what color was being produced by the size or shape of the melanosomes. And the same thing now with the melanin. So they think that these bats looked the same as modern bats.
Yeah, reddish brown color.
Which is a very typical color of today's bats.
So again, you have an example of an animal in the fossil record that's supposed to be millions of years old, and yet it didn't change one iota. It didn't evolve at all
right.
over millions of years.
And it reminds me of the fabulous video by Carl Werner, mm-hmm.
Living Fossils.
One of our favorite interviews here at Real Science Radio is Dr. Carl Werner and his Living Fossils book and video. We sell the video. It's just tremendous. So Fred, here again, this is original biological material. So we could add this to our list. You know, we have our Real Science Radio list of dinosaur soft tissue published in peer-reviewed journals. And there's a brand new paper published. Mm-hmm. Down at the bottom, we have supplemental material. You click on that, you get an online spreadsheet of scores of papers in science journals of fresh fossils.
Yeah, the list is enormous.
Original biological material, which should not be there.
Yeah. You still have evolutionists in denial that still claim it's not the original material. It's just bacteria.
It's bacteria. They're science deniers. They're soft tissue deniers.
Yeah, STDs.
They're STDs. Soft tissue deniers.
So I like this next one, Bob. It reminds me of your debate with Aaron Raw.
Oh, yeah, that atheist. Yeah, I haven't thought about
tree
him
stumps,
in a while.
Fossilized tree stumps.
Yeah, in fact, they have a whole fossilized forest in Norway. The Arctic Norway.
Wait a minute. The Arctic Circle.
So north of the Arctic
Didn't he
Circle.
Say that you didn't find any tropical
stuff.
Items up in the Arctic?
I had told Aaron Ra, this very famous atheist, especially on YouTube, where he has millions of views. Very angry atheist.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he's a pothead.
He's a pothead.
Okay. He's a pothead.
No doubt about it, about it in my mind.
So at any rate, I asked Aaron Ra. And if people are interested in that, rsr.org/pot, that's a must-read article.
Yeah, it is.
In the show there.
And they can watch your debate with him, both listen to it.
They could listen to the debate with Aaron Ra, or they could read it at an atheist website over in England.
Yep. Yeah, you can hear it on our website, right? Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And a written version, too.
rsr.org/Ra.
Ra. R-A.
Like in Egypt, Amun Ra. Yeah. He's Aaron Ra. We're talking about frozen mammoths.
Yep.
So mammoths north of the Arctic Circle. And he said, I've heard you Christians talk about that for decades and that there were millions and there was only 51 and none of them were found with any kind of tropical flora in their system.
There were 51.
51. So I said, Aaron, I have the data right here. There are millions north of the Arctic Circle, just estimated by the tonnage of their tusks sold on the world market. I have the peer-reviewed articles, the encyclopedia articles, millions, millions of these mammoths in the Arctic Circle, which, by the way, they can't live there. They call them woolly mammoths. They didn't have any wool.
Yeah,
they had
a little bit of hair.
They had a little bit of hair. They can't survive in the Arctic Circle. They need a couple hundred gallons of water every day to survive, and it's all ice up there for 6 months. They can't live up there, but there's millions.
They could have lived up there in the past, right?
Well, they could have. With the global flood, something happened.
Something
that
different.
Caused them
tilted
to be
the
buried
earth a little bit.
And the earth rolled.
Yeah.
And suddenly, you have tropical forest in the Arctic.
Yeah.
So here
buried
in, this,
in the Arctic.
Here in this study, this is fun. This is in the journal Geology, 2015. A Dr. Berry from England, they have been studying a fossilized tropical forest in the Arctic Norway. So that's really cool.
Oh, it is.
Now, I emailed Dr. Berry just today, so I haven't had a reply yet, but I asked him about these trees because his paper implies that they grew in situ. They grew there where they found them. And that could be.
Yeah, it could be, but you wanted to know if there's roots. Was there a root system?
Yeah. Right.
Because it reminds us of something else, right?
Well, in Yellowstone, for decades, the evolutionists had said all these petrified trees, they grew here in place in 30 different strata on one big hillside. And so that's evidence right there of millions of years.
Yeah.
And what they did not tell the public for decades is that those trees had no root system.
There was no root system.
Their roots were systematically broken off within about 3 feet of the base of the trunk.
So no roots there. So they could not have grown there, but it sure sounds like they could have been transported there.
Transported by water, and they were upright floaters.
And most scientists now agree with that.
Yes, right.
And there was a sign that was there that's now gone.
Right.
Because it said it had bad science. That's amazing they took that sign down.
It is. We worked with the National Park Ranger of Haleakala on Maui in Hawaii, that beautiful volcano. What a gorgeous place to go. And he worked then with his peer at Yellowstone to get the sign removed. They should have corrected it, but they removed
it. Yeah, instead of, they should have just corrected it.
Yeah. So because what they said was wrong. So I asked Dr. Berry in this email, I explained all that and asked him, do you have positive evidence for root systems, or is it similar to Yellowstone where the roots are broken off? So
it'll be interesting to get a reply, and if we do, we'll update our listening audience.
Yes. The next story in Creation Magazine, the best creation publication in the world, I think, is about exoplanets. In fact, this is one planet in particular, Kepler-438b.
438b.
Yes. You know, they have about 1,000 exoplanets that they've documented pretty well now, and they think they found a bunch more. And these are those outside of our solar system. So this planet is about 470 light years from Earth. So that's how far it is. Light years measure distance, not time. This is what evolutionary scientists had claimed was an example of a planet in a habitable zone around its star. And they thought, you know, it's very much like our planet Earth.
Yeah. They try to do that a lot, don't they?
They do.
It never works.
They say, you know, our sun is just the typical sun. Yeah. Name me two or three or four other suns like our sun that's so astoundingly stable in its energy output. Yeah. So it turns out this planet could not support life because it is blasted by vast quantities of radiation on a regular basis because it's nice. Gentle sun has a temper.
Yeah. So I think we've got Privileged Planet in our store, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
So definitely recommend that very well-produced video of why Earth is in a special place.
Yes.
If you haven't seen it, you need to. Even PBS broadcast it. I was shocked.
Yeah. RSR.org, and then just click on the store, and you could browse the science department. And those videos, Fred, we have so many. The best. You know, there's got to be 500 creation science videos. Intelligent design videos, and we've narrowed it down to a selection of a dozen
of our favorites.
Best.
Yeah,
the absolute.
So you're
going to
get a really good video, whatever you grab there.
Yes. Okay. Next story. I love this. This is going to go on our list of not so old things.
Yeah, it is. And you know, we joke about how you're a kind of a rockhead, and I'm not. You know, geology.
Yeah.
I like this story. It is really interesting. You know, we've talked about cavitation before, what water can do, and how powerful it is. Well, it's amazing what rocks can do and how these rocks carved out this canyon, and what it carved out was exceptionally hard rock itself, right?
Yeah. In fact, this was bedrock, and they call it unweathered granite bedrock, which is extremely hard.
Extremely hard.
And so if you find a gorge carved in this kind of bedrock, you would think, well, that had to take millions of years.
It had to take forever because the rock is really, really hard.
Right. So scientists at Plymouth University, they decided they were going to study this gorge based on photographic evidence. And I love that. That's like at Mount St. Helens, right? Photographic evidence. And they found out that this gorge was formed, and it's pretty big. It's, you know, almost 1,000 feet long and 500 feet wide and 300 feet deep.
Wow.
Pretty big.
That is big.
Hole in the ground.
It is.
Carved in solid granite.
Solid granite. I like what one of the authors said.
Yeah.
If you showed someone images of this gorge, they would probably say the erosion had taken place over a long period with exceptional flooding. He just says long period because
he doesn't want to
feed us creationists, you know.
Right.
You know, you'd think millions of years. Well, you know, that is what they would think.
These evolutionists but they just said are being long taught period. Not to give quotes that creationists could use.
Yeah, but we'll use this one anyways.
Oh,
he says long period.
So
we know what he's implying.
It turns out that this gorge was formed over a period of 6 years.
Yeah, which is kind of a long time compared to like Mount St. Helens blowing up.
Yeah.
And, carving out that gorge in like a matter of hours, really.
Yeah. And so 6 years, a handful of relatively small floods did this. And we have on the show, like you mentioned, cavitation. We've talked about what water can do and the 1 mile deep of sediments deposited on the continents of the earth globally, worldwide. Mm-hmm. And that is all the result of transport from the global flood.
Yep.
And something called liquefaction, the sorting of those sediments under when they're submerged, even when they're buried. And that's why you have thousands of square miles of perfectly divided strata with flat gaps between them, with no evidence of erosion between the gaps.
Yeah, because water is so corrosive. You know, it should be easily shown that there's erosion.
Like,
but
at
you've
the
got
Grand
huge
Canyon.
Long flat. I mean, these flat lines, they go for a long time.
For hundreds
they
of miles.
They overwhelmingly overturn
direction.
The geologic column.
Yes.
It totally refutes it. Totally.
And at the Grand Canyon, there's over 100 million years of missing geologic eras.
Yeah.
They're just gone.
And when they are there, allegedly, these long eras, they're these flat gaps.
Yes.
So over millions of years, you had no water at
no
all.
No erosion, no weather, no animals.
On. Yeah. Exactly.
It's, yeah.
I mean, they're really nicely flat. It's pretty cool.
No forests.
Yeah.
It's all make-believe. The old Earth evolutionary worldview is make-believe.
It's make-believe. It's
and
a fairy tale for grown-ups.
Yeah, it's a fairy tale for grown-ups. So, you know, by the way, but this does remind me of an error that we creationists made in a video that I absolutely love, Mount St. Helens, mm-hmm. by geologist Dr. Stephen Austin. He did talk about Engineers Canyon, which is off to the side up there. And he said that the U.S. Corps of Engineers, they did a spillway, and they in that runoff water carved this canyon. So we got a government scientist who's a young earth creationist mm-hmm. to investigate that claim, because we were challenged on it by atheists. And he did a fabulous job.
Yeah, Dr. Ed Holroyd.
Ed Holroyd,
a friend
right.
of the show.
Yes, who teaches telemetry and reading satellite data of the Earth's surface at Metro State University here. And so he's an expert in this. And what a great job he did. He wrote up a 10-page report showing that that runoff did not carve Engineers Canyon. So that was a bit of a mistake that we had reported on Real Science Radio occasionally. So we wanted to correct that. But Fred, that's it. We're out of time. What a fun Creation Magazine. I just love this issue for 2016. This is basically the spring edition number two.
Number two. You can get it at creation.com.
Yes. We highly recommend it. And until next week, this is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science.